Let's all go to the lobby. 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 Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinema Shakedown, the weekly podcast that functions as a grab bag for all things film. I'm your host, Kyle Craigbaum.
And I'm your other host, Jordan Dennis.
This week, we are going to be talking about a few new releases. Because we missed last week, a few scheduling conflicts.
I need to point out to everyone that I forgot this was an auditory medium for a second, and when you said new films, I held up a three sign, because we're talking about three new movies, but it didn't dawn on me until after I held up the three sign that nobody could see that. So I guess that was just for me and you. Just a little reminder.
So we missed last week.
We sure did.
So we're going to be making up by talking about Infinity Pool. That's what we saw last week.
Yeah.
And then this week... You saw...
Peak. I saw the greatest movie ever made, 80 for Brady.
And we both saw...
Knock at the Cabin.
Knock at the Cabin, the new Shyamalan film. Before we get into all that, how are you doing, Jordan?
I am doing pretty good, man.
Very nice.
I just woke up, fresh out the shower, feeling squeaky clean, ready to talk about some movies.
There you go. You watch anything else this week?
Oh, I'm trying to think of what... I guess I can talk about everything I've watched because we didn't do the last episode. So I rewatched Birdman, one of my favorite movies of that decade. I fucking love this movie. I think it's an excellent satire on, like, the current state of, like, Hollywood versus, like, the pretensions of the theater world and everything, and that conflict and contrast and how those interact and everything. And I think... Michael Keaton's phenomenal in the movie. Should have won the Oscar. He's incredible. Five out of five. I fucking love Birdman. Yeah. I watched Banshees of Inisherin. I didn't love it, but I really liked it. I'm not on like the huge hype train. I think some stuff, there are some leaps in logic in the movie that I'm just kind of like, I couldn't really get behind, but I get the appeal, you know what I mean? Like, it's still a really charming, really, like, funny, but also, like, sad movie.
Yeah.
Like, a dark comedy for sure. I love all the performances. Martin McDonagh hasn't really, like, lost a step in, like, the screenplay department. I just think the story that the film is telling is a little, like, okay. 3.5 out of 5 for that one. I rewatched Hell or High Water, also one of my favorite movies from the last decade.
That's also one of my favorites.
One of the best neo-westerns ever. Fuck who directed it, that's a Taylor Sheridan joint. Like through and through. That is Taylor Sheridan, like all. I think it's David McKenzie directed.
David McKenzie directed. Yes.
But that is like Taylor Sheridan, Yellowstone, like through and through. Again, you want to talk about great performances and...
All three of the central
performances. Yeah, dude. That didn't get a whole lot of love award season when that came out. And I think that is just criminal, personally. Yeah. 5 out of 5 for Hell or High Water. Fucking love that movie.
Yep.
I rewatched Skinamarink. Still a 4. Still a great movie. Really scary. If you like analog horror, Mandela Catalog. If you've seen Kyle Edward Ball's short film Heck on YouTube, it's that. Go watch it. It's great if you're into that. 4 out of 5 still. I watched Raiders of the Lost Ark. My favorite movie of all time on some days. It's a perfect movie. Spielberg was on... I truly believe that the powers of God... came through Spielberg during that. Like, he shot lightning from his fingers and out of his eye holes and shit. That dude was on one.
Yeah.
5 out of 5 for Raiders. If I could give that an 11 out of 5, I would. I watched The Departed. I showed that to our roommate Sam for the first time. That's, you know what's funny is I haven't seen a lot of Scorsese, but I have seen The Departed like a bunch of times.
It's a great movie.
Fucking love The Departed. Whoever got Mark Wahlberg to say the word microprocesses 6 times in a row is genius. 5 out of 5, great movie. One of the only times the Oscars got it right for Best Picture. And then finally, last night, I rewatched The Terminator, which I haven't seen in years.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic movie. Genuine movie magic. It's a lot more like Isaac Asimov, like, existential kind of horror than I remembered.
Yeah.
It's honestly a little closer to Blade Runner than you would think for a movie like that.
It is.
Like, it deals with, there's a lot of, like really slow scenes where Kyle Reese, Michael Biehn, is just kind of, like, talking about the machines and, like, how they took over and how it was kind of our fault and everything. And it's like, damn, this is, this is really high concept. Like, I could see why this is a classic outside of, like, the usual I'll be back.
Sure.
But yeah, it's The Terminator. It's great. 4.5 out of 5. Mm-hmm. Great movie.
Wow.
Yeah, so I just wanted to lightning round through that real quick. Oh, and I also watched The Bear. I don't know if I ever talked about that on here. I didn't rewatch it. I watched The Bear for the first time. Excellent show. It's like the Safdies meets Ted Lasso set in a restaurant. Like, it's this colorful cast of cooks and stuff, and it's about, like, their internal struggles and their problems. You know, I know you want to watch it, so I won't get into, like, the nitty gritty of the plot and everything.
Yeah.
But no, it's really good, dude. All the performances are great. Jeremy Allen White is a revelation. I know he was on Shameless, but, like,
sure,
giving him the reins on something, really letting him fucking take over. He's got a monologue towards the end that's very reminiscent of Pearl, where it just kind of, like, holds on him for, like, 5 minutes and doesn't break. And, dude, it's some of the most powerful shit I've ever seen. That show rocked. That is, it's like 4.5 out of 5 for a TV show. What'd you watch?
I've also been on a TV show kick. I haven't watched a lot of movies lately.
Mm-hmm.
The only one I watched is I rewatched Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Fantastic fucking movie. One of the best edited films ever.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they make it coherent while also disorienting in such a powerful way. Jim Carrey, never been better.
Like, by the end of it, everything, like, comes together and you're like, oh shit. Like, yeah. Like, it all makes sense.
Yeah, outstanding film.
Yeah.
That's a 5. It's a 5. And, yeah, I've been watching TV. I'm watching Mr. Robot.
Nice. Have you seen that before? Or?
I watched a couple episodes.
Okay, word.
I watched the first episode, like, 3 times, and I always got busy after it.
I remember you, like, talking about it before, so I wasn't sure
if I watched part of the first season, but now I'm, like, actually going through it, and it rocks. It's
you're going through it?
Well, you'd think, you know, a show with that premise, like a hacker, you're like, oh, that's going to be boring.
Yeah.
Just, like, on paper, you're like, okay. But it's got a lot of the same energy as a Fincher film.
Yeah.
Like a Social Network or a Fight Club.
For sure.
And it Rami Malek and Christian Slater are fantastic in it. Mm-hmm. It's just such one of the best shot TV shows I've ever seen.
Do you think the reason it doesn't get talked about quite as much as, like, a Breaking Bad or, like, a Sopranos or a Mad Men? Because it seems like it's of that, like, quality of performance and shit like that, but, like, do you think the reason it doesn't get talked about in that sphere is because, like, the cultural stigma around, like, anonymous and, like, society and, like, I'm in the Matrix grid and all that, like it's that has kind of become, like, corny, so do you think maybe that's, like,
I think that's one of the reasons. I've also heard that as the show goes on, especially through season 2, it gets a lot less accessible and more experimental, and
really?
I think that puts a lot of people off. Not me, dog.
No, that sounds like your shit. Yeah, fuck yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the last episode I watched was literally like a drug trip, relapse episode, and it was so good.
I love relapsing.
I'm also watching, obviously, I'm still watching The Last of Us. Still great.
Best
video game adaptation.
Oh, but don't you want to talk about Vox Machina? Come on.
It's good. It's inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's inconsistent.
The Eli Manning of animated shows.
I have no attachment to Critical Role.
Not whatsoever.
At all. But this is, like, it's a good, decent animated show.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's fine.
It's cute.
It's cute. It's well animated.
For something that was, like, paid for by fans, I just hope, they're getting what they...
Oh, and they are. They're eating good. It's just, like, yeah, it's for fans.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to enjoy it with people.
Trying your best.
Yeah. It's good.
Kyle, this is... Turn down the mic. Jamie, can you turn on the mic? Kyle, this is a safe space. This is a safe space. You can talk about talk shit. It's fine.
Here's the thing about the show. It's if you're just watching it for visuals and action and stuff, it is, like, entertaining.
Sure.
It's mindless. It's just that the idea of trying to condense a D&D campaign into 20-minute episodes.
Oh, okay.
25-minute episodes.
How many episodes are in the season?
12 per season.
See, that does seem a little, like, why would they want to do...
It's just a lot, you know? And the first season, when you look at it, the first season was a lot more coherent because the first season tackles what I assume is, like, the most coherent story arc.
Yeah.
Like, because it focuses on, like, one character's, like, story.
Yeah.
And his connection to the villains and stuff. So it feels very, you know, simple.
Yeah.
This one, it's trying to do a lot more, and for better and for worse, it feels more like a D&D campaign.
It's like better highs and lower lows than, like, the first season?
Yeah, it's just messy. It's developing the characters a lot more, but again, you can only do so much with
when you're juggling such a...
It's just an inherent flaw with trying to develop something that is so undevelopable.
Exactly, like, you play a D&D campaign and you have so much freedom for it to be, like, nonsensical.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really, like, have to make sense or add up, you know what I mean? Because you have that, like, improvisation nature, so you can just, like, change stuff on it. So it's really hard to, like, make something like that conform. It's like trying to turn a Mad Lib into a novel, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly. So Legend of Vox Machina, it's on Amazon Prime. First season's a 3.5, and the second season is either a 3 or 3.5, depending on how it ends.
I can't believe we got 2 seasons of Vox Machina before we got season 2 of Invincible.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for that.
That's gonna kick ass.
But I think it worked.
Is that ready to wrap it up or catch up?
I think we're ready to get into some things.
Let's get into the meat of our episode today.
Infinity Pool.
Brandon Cronenberg, son of the other Cronenberg.
David
Cronenberg. I forgot his first name. Fuck.
And Infinity Pool is his third movie. I thought it was his second,
sure.
But I saw that there was another one on there, so. It's his third movie, and it follows a writer named James, who kind of...
Jamesy!
He and his wife go on a vacation in this foreign, beautiful beaches.
I'm forgetting
the name of the country.
Give me, like Southern Europe vibes.
Right,
like.
And he's trying to kind of re-spark... His creative spark.
He's lost the passion
for writing.
Yeah.
He wrote one book, and then he has a severe writer's block. So he's thinking that maybe this will give him the spark that he needs. And he meets a girl named Gabby, played by Mia Goth.
I did not know that was her name.
I didn't either until looking at this. But I don't think they ever say it.
No.
But the main lead is played by Alexander Skarsgård. Yep. And she kind of takes him down the rabbit hole a little bit.
Of this nightmarish world that they inhabit.
That's what I can say without spoilers. This is a very strange movie.
Yeah, it is. That was fine.
Yeah?
Yeah, part of me... we'll get more into this in spoilers. You say it's strange, and it is. But at the same time, I've seen weirder.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm a victim of my own expectations here, but as someone who's never seen a Cronenberg movie, I was kind of expecting a little more like The Fly or something here, you know what I mean? Like show me a little, like, you know, like, I guess I expected a little more science fiction kind of supernatural, like
it's not that.
Really going off with, like, the creature effects and special effects and all that, and it is not that at all. And I appreciate it for what it is. I respect this movie a lot more than I like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I think the art on display here is cool. I think all the performances are really good. I don't like when movies are so transparently just therapy sessions for the creators that aren't also really therapy sessions for the audience. You feel me? Like, without getting into spoilers, clearly this movie was very cathartic for Brandon Cronenberg. And me, personally, I just don't feel like it was very cathartic for anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm wrong about that, that's obviously. But, like, I don't know. I appreciate it, and I appreciate what he's trying to do here. I kind of wish it was weirder. I'm gonna be honest.
Okay.
It's a little slow in spots, and I didn't expect that.
I really like this movie, but I totally understand not liking it.
Yeah.
I think I come down on this side of, I really like what it's saying thematically.
For sure, for sure.
It has a lot of ideas that I wasn't, like, expecting from, like, the trailer and stuff. Like, oh, okay, this is what they're going for.
That is the strongest part of the movie, I think, is how it functions as a thematic exercise.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it covers all these broad themes and everything, and it does that really well.
I also think that it's a very well shot movie.
Yes, it looks terrific.
Beautiful.
Were you about to talk about, like, the trip sequences where they fuck in?
There's a couple trip sequences that are beautiful.
Really visually stunning shit.
And there's a scene involving, like, a pool of...
An infinity pool?
The infinity pool, if you will. And it's really cool.
Yeah.
Flash warning. Don't go to...
Maybe cover your eyes for that.
I've never seen a movie put a flash warning, like, in the movie before. But, like, it was at the beginning of, like, the actual
movie. Yeah.
Very interesting. Kareem Hussein was the cinematographer. So, yeah. But I just really... I thought Alexander Skarsgård was really good. I thought Mia Goth was really weird and good.
She's really weird.
But, yeah. I can totally understand this not being someone's cup of tea, being too slow.
Yeah.
But I thought its eventual destination was satisfying enough for me to enjoy the journey. I really vibed with it.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Do we just want to jump right into spoilers? I feel like this one's a little hard to talk about without getting into
it's a little tough because it's the main conceit. So.
This one's a 3 out of 5 for me right now. I did enjoy it. I probably would like it more on a second watch now that I kind of know what I'm getting into. But as it stands, 3 out of 5.
I'm gonna give it a 4. I really did dig it a lot.
I think the problem with this movie is that the characters just needed like a little more, like a little layer deeper, you know what I mean? I just think the characters are just a bit, like, too shallow in this movie. Mm-hmm. Just a bit too much. Like, and again, like, I don't think you need to, like, rework this whole script or anything. Like, I just think, I think a little more path. Because, you know, Alexander Skarsgård, like, you learn certain things about him, but I don't know. I didn't find that character, like, the performance is good, but I didn't find that character, like, particularly super likable or interesting or anything, but they are also kind of supposed to be just like average Joe, like schlub type that kind of gets. So I understand the thought there, but and I think this movie certainly substantially gets better as it goes.
Yeah,
I think once so Mia Goth is with these. Okay, so the actual plot of this movie is that after Alexander Skarsgård and his wife run into Mia Goth and her husband, and they kind of, like, go out for, like, a joyride and out of the town. They are drunk, they're driving, they crash into, like, a farmer and kill him. And so the government arrests them, and because they're, like, rich, affluent tourists, they offer them a service that's provided by the government where they put you into a pool of red goo, and it creates a double, like a living, breathing clone of you. That's, like, sentient, has all your memories and shit. It is quite literally another you, and then they kill that in your place so you can get off scot-free and, you know, continue doing depraved rich people shit, which is what they do every time. Like, they keep doing it. Again, the infinity pool.
Yeah.
They keep, like, making these doubles and everything, and every time they do, like, they're doing more and more depraved acts that are, like, perverted and violent and just really getting into the vulgar shit. And Skarsgård is kind of, like... The whole conflict of the movie is whether it's, like, he's being pulled into this world, but, like, his moral sensibilities are...
And it's also subtly revealed that they kill the real version of you.
Yeah.
And the clone is what remains. So, like, basically, it's a copy of a copy of a copy, copy after of a copy. A
yeah, because it gets your memories, so it's essentially just, like... And I think, like, that's clearly, like a metaphor for, like... For me, my interpretation, anyway, is this movie is essentially Cronenberg, like, entering the Hollywood system, being exposed to these, like, rich freaks and weirdos, and, like, part of him, like, wants to be in this world, but a part of him doesn't, and every time he, like, indulges in these things, like, he loses a bit of his humanity.
And it's about imposter syndrome as well, not feeling like you are yourself in your own body. That's kind of the arc of him as a writer who doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't feel like he's
trying to find himself.
And then eventually, it's also commentary on how rich people, because of their status, can get away with whatever, any depraved act. There's a lot of different layers of commentary going on, and that's kind of what is, like, fueling the film for me, what it's saying. I know there's been a lot of, like, Eat the Rich movies lately. I think this one does it in a different way.
For sure. It certainly does it with Cronenberg flair.
And I really like where the movie ends, where he's just, he is nothing anymore.
Yep.
Whatever he is. There's nothing left.
He tries to escape at the end, and it just doesn't work out. And then right at the end, he just decides to stay on the island.
Well, there's a very telling shot where he, like, looks at his passport and he stares at his name, and I think that's him realizing, like, I am not this person.
No, like, that person is dead.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
he's clone number 652 or whatever.
That orgy scene's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Love an orgy. I think more orgies should be put
in
movies.
They take powerful psychedelics and then have an orgy.
It's like real peyote shit. Like, they put in a fucking, like, lamp burner.
Yeah. And one of the most visually stunning scenes is when he first enters the infinity pool, and they do a lot of weird,
like, this crazy light show,
like glitchy, bizarre,
like a 100 Gex concert.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that. I mean,
that's pretty much all I got to say. Yeah,
yeah, I really like this movie. I think that I can't promise you will like it. It very much depends on the
person. I think this is one people should watch and form their own opinion.
I agree.
Sure. Like, I could recommend this to people. Like,
agreed. Certainly a unique journey. I'm very happy I saw it.
Diving straight into the infinity.
So yeah, 4 out of 5 for me.
3 out of 5. Let's talk about Peak.
Okay. We're gonna do a little interview.
Yeah, a little. So you did not see the greatest movie of 2023, unfortunately.
I did not.
Everything Everywhere All at Once of this year.
Jordan, how about you give a plot synopsis for 80 for Brady?
Okay, so 80 for Brady stars 4 legendary actresses of the screen: Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, Rita Moreno, Sally Field, who all play they're like lifelong friends. They're friends. And they have a tradition where they watch Tom Brady and the Pats play football every Sunday. That's like their thing. They get together, you know, they the ceremony and all that. And one of them, Lily Tomlin, one day gets the idea that, hey, they should go see Tom Brady play in the Super Bowl. This is Super Bowl 51, which was like 2017. It is 2017, because I remember that it popped up at the beginning of the movie, and I was like, I can't believe we're getting 2017 period pieces now.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, and so it is a fun madcap adventure of these four ladies hitting the town, giving it one last go and going to the Super Bowl to see their man Tom Brady win that shit.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, man.
Hell yeah. So, did you like the movie?
I liked 80 for Brady. I liked it more than I expected, actually. So, there's actually, like, an emotional layer to this movie that I didn't anticipate, that I was kind of like, oh, like, a worse movie wouldn't do that. But they really go for that. And it's like, again, like, I love this movie's earnestness and simplicity. It never tries to be anything more than what it is. It never overreaches. It never overextends itself. It's never offensive at any point. It's just such a cute, sweet movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said about that.
Out of the ladies, who's the standout?
Sally Field.
Sally Field's
really funny in the movie. So their personalities are like, Rita Moreno is kind of, she's like a divorcee, so she's kind of like sad a little bit and stuff like that. Jane Fonda's the whore. She writes Gronk erotica, and that's like why she's like has money and shit. And Sally Field's like the bookish one who's like, I'm an accountant. I'm a statistician. Like, I can't go to the Super Bowl. I'm an old lady. And she's really funny in it. She does like a Guy Fieri hot wings competition at one point, and she's just putting them back like fucking.
Oh well, see, Sally Field had the only line in the movie in the trailer that made me laugh. Which the fucking if you pass out, who do you want us to call? An ambulance.
There's she has one funny line when they're all going. They're like, yeah, we're all 80 for Brady, and she's like, I'm 75. Like,
yeah,
it's fun. She's cute, but they're all really good. I don't know. I was watching I watched Karsten Rundquist's review of 80 for Brady, and he made a really good point where, with these actresses, even if the jokes don't land, the difference between a joke not landing in this movie and a joke not landing in another movie is that in another movie, it's usually like Ryan Reynolds making bad jokes. It's like an annoying side character, something like that.
Right.
With this, when it's like sweet old ladies, you know what I mean, and they make a joke that like is kind of like, eh, or whatever, you know, it's like, there's like an adorableness to it, you know what I mean? You're like, oh, grandma, like.
Right.
So I think that really helps the movies in favor, because like there are funny. It's about 50-50 in terms of the jokes, you know what I mean?
How is Tom Brady in it?
Would you be shocked if I told you Tom Brady could kind of act?
Yeah, really.
He's in like two scenes towards the end, maybe. Like, he pops up, but he gives this this speech to Lily Tomlin in the end. And I don't know, something about it felt so, like, genuine and from the heart. Like, he's, like it's like, the farthest cry from, like, Michael Jordan's Space Jam, like, in terms of athletes turned actor. Like, it is...
Yeah, what's going on here?
Surprised the shit out of me.
Yeah. That's very nice to hear.
Yeah. We might be seeing him... We might be seeing Mr. Brady, on our big screens in the future going forward.
Well, I want to ask you some spoiler questions.
Yeah, for sure. So. Let's get into spoilers for 80 for Brady. I also give this one a 3 out of 5, but just like Infinity Pool, I could probably get this to a 3.5 on a rewatch.
So there is a scene where one of them eats a pot brownie and hallucinates Guy Fieri.
Yes.
How was that?
They go to... So most of the movie is actually not spent at the Super Bowl. That's like the last like act or whatever. Most of it is they spend their time at the NFL Experience, which is like a lot. So the whole movie's a commercial for the NFL, but I really don't mind. Because I mean, I'm going to watch the Super Bowl anyway. But they spend their whole time at this like where there's like skill challenges and shit. That's where the Hot Wings thing with Guy Fieri is and everything. And then there, they get invited to this party where not only do they do the pop brownie bit, but they do an Eyes Wide Shut bit. Which I did not expect.
That's crazy.
I forgot what the original question was.
That wasn't really a question. I just wanted you to describe the fucking pop brownie.
Oh yeah, I think it's either brownies or gummies, but someone it gets like slipped to them, and they're just fucking. And then Rita Moreno plays poker, like charity poker, with a bunch of dudes who also have Guy Fieri's face. It's funny. It's, you know.
Are there any other scenes worth spoiling?
Worth spoiling. How much do you know about Super Bowl 51?
Not.
Okay, so Super Bowl 51, you've got the New England Patriots and the Atlanta Falcons. Now, at a certain point in this game, Atlanta was up 28-3. Holy the shit. Statistical probability of the New England Patriots coming back and winning this game was about 0.7%. They point that out in the movie. And there's a scene. I think it's the best scene in the movie where they break into the ladies break into the fucking coordinator booth for the Patriots, and Lily Tomlin gives a speech to Tom Brady over the fucking, like the headset speaker, and Tom Brady looks at her and is like, and that's when they get their one F-bomb in the movie. He's like, let's fucking go! And shit like that. I was like, alright, this is what the movies are about.
That's funny.
This is the shit.
Do you have anything else to say about 80 for Brady?
Go see this with your grandma or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Is it reinventing the wheel and all that? Is this gonna blow your fucking mind? No. But in terms of like sweet, you know, comedies and stuff like that. Like I said, what I was talking about with the emotional layer earlier is that it turns out Lily Tomlin's character is like in remission from cancer, and okay. The reason she's doing this whole thing is because she gets a note from the doctor that she hasn't opened yet, and she's kind of like, I'm scared, like, what it's gonna say and stuff like that, so I want to do this one last thing with my friends in case, you know, like, I'm not around too much longer. And I was like, oh, okay, like, that's, a, like, you know, like, the movie I was expecting wouldn't have done that, you know what I mean? But the fact that they even take the time to put something like that in to get you, like, even, like, remotely emotionally invested, commendable. Like, this movie could have just been, like... Wow, football, and it's really not that.
Okay.
But anyway, back to what I was saying. The Patriots come back and win that game.
Yeah.
Out of a 28-3 deficit, and yeah.
That's awesome.
Wild shit. Well, it's awesome if you're a Patriots fan.
Oh yeah.
Sorry to the Atlanta Falcons.
That's all.
Sorry they haven't been good since then.
Wow.
Anyway, I guess that concludes football talk.
Football talk
on the podcast.
Now we get into. Knock at the Cabin.
M. Night Shyamalan. Director, writer, producer.
One of the most...
Auteur.
One of the most divisive and controversial figures directing movies.
The Christopher Nolan of Denis Villeneuve's.
I don't know what that means, but sure.
Yeah. Isn't it weird to think about that M. Night Shyamalan and Christopher Nolan are, like, from the same generation of director?
Yeah.
Because you would... I don't know why, but they, like... Shyamalan is so 2000s, and Nolan is so 2010s to me. Like, but, like, they were making... They came up at, like, the same time.
They
it's
did,
weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They did. I think Signs and Memento came out the same year or something like that. Yeah. Okay, so this film follows a gay couple, Andrew and Eric, played by Ben Aldridge and Jonathan Groff. They have an adopted little daughter, a little Asian daughter, and they're vacationing at a...
What, are you not going to say the adopted little Asian daughter's name?
It's Wen?
That is Wen, actually, yeah.
They are vacationing in a cabin in the woods.
It's like an Airbnb.
And one day the little girl's playing outside and she's approached by a man, a big man played by Dave Bautista named Leonard.
The meatball himself.
And eventually his friends, his acquaintances kind of make themselves known and they kind of hold them hostage.
It's like a home invasion.
It's a home invasion where they tell them that they have to sacrifice one of them to prevent the apocalypse. And that's the basic premise without spoiling it. How'd you like it?
I thought this shit rocked.
Yeah.
As someone, I speak for both of us, as two people who were pretty disappointed by Old, I think this scratched an itch that did not even get close to.
Yeah.
I made a tweet about it. Old feels like all of, like, the stuff people make fun of Shyamalan for, kind of compartmentalized into a movie, like the silly plot, the corny dialogue, the fucking, like, the big twist in the end and everything. This movie feels like everything that makes Shyamalan great,
yeah,
cranked up to 11. Like the tension and the dread of this movie is palpable. Like you, and again, like it's interesting to show, like, to tell an apocalyptic story like this on such a small scale.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But you still feel like the fucking world is ending.
Yeah, I'm mostly with you. I like this movie a lot. Mm-hmm. I think this is the best movie since Split.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that it does so much right. I think it has some of his quirks that I don't like seeing.
Sure.
But I think it gets off to a kind of rocky start in the first 20 minutes or so. But once you kind of lock into the basic premise...
But I love that opening, man.
The opening's not bad. But it has some clunky dialogue at first. He's never been the best at that. But again, once the movie gets going, once it gets started, it's a ride. It's a trip. Great performances. The way he shoots things is very unique. For the last few years...
Shyamalan, like, switches up his shooting style every movie. Like, this looks nothing like Old. And, like, Old looks nothing like Glass, you know what I mean? Like, all of his movies look and feel
completely different. I will never hate watching one of his movies because he always takes big swings. Yeah. I really appreciate what
he does.
Dude just
makes what he wants to make. So hit or miss, like...
And this movie is kind of, you know... throughout his career, you've seen his connection to spirituality as a concept.
Yeah.
You've seen it in Signs, you've seen it in Unbreakable. But in this one, he carries it even further towards that.
This movie, I think, more so than those, kind of has, like, a bitterness to it towards, like, spirituality and all that. Like, almost, I don't know. Like, just kind of like, this is the one movie where I feel like he's kind of like, maybe humanity isn't worth saving.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, now it's a question for him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. You also see, in ways, his obsession with nature, which have popped up a couple times in The Happening. And, you know, I mean, there are shades of The Happening in this.
I like to,
and The Village.
I like
as well.
To think that The Happening apocalypse is happening outside of the cabin while the cabin's going on.
But, you know, the question that this movie poses, where you aren't sure for a while if Dave Bautista is a crazy person or
like,
if he's
like,
telling
the
truth.
If the apocalypse is actually happening.
Ben Aldrich, as one of the fathers, gives the best performance to me. I think he's excellent in this movie.
Yeah.
I think he grounds the whole movie in this sense of fear. But Dave Bautista's
I think, the whole ensemble's, like, terrific. Rupert Grint for like the
he's really good.
For the time he's in it is really good. Jonathan Groff is really good as kind of the more like their dynamic is Ben Aldrich is a little more like hot-headed kind of leap in action where Jonathan Groff's a little more like calm again. He's the one that kind of like buys into their shtick a little bit.
And
with the Doomsdayer.
Like you said earlier, the way this builds tension is very palpable. And it has a couple set pieces that are really great.
Yeah.
A couple moments that like really stick with me are like stuck with me. I'm conflicted about the last 10 minutes. Part of me wanted it to keep itself a little more ambiguous.
Yeah.
Or I'll explain a little less. But part of me thinks that a couple of the reincorporated elements work very well in that last.
I love Shyamalan's restraint in the end with this movie.
Yeah.
Because there's no big twist.
Right.
There's no, like, bombshell. And, like I think there's something to say, like, thematically about the movie. Like, with the end of the world, I feel like you're, like, waiting for the reveal or something like that. And then you're just kind of left with that moment, like,
yeah.
No, like, it's gonna end. Like, this is the end here. And I don't know, like, I think something about that, like, really stuck with me. I was like, okay, like that, I feel like maybe Shyamalan in, you know, if he was making Old, like, I feel like he would have diverted to putting something like that in there. But I don't know, there was a maturity to ending the movie the way he did, I think, yeah. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I can talk more about what I mean in spoilers.
For sure.
Let's just jump right into it. I'm going to give Knock at the Cabin a 3.5 out of 5.
4 out of 5 for me. I really dug Knock at the Cabin.
I like it a lot. So, yeah. I love Rupert Grint's death scene. That's the first time you see someone die. And the way they shoot it, they basically, his head is the only thing in frame. And they basically stab them with all their tools at the top of his head, but you don't see it until he falls over. Really great use of framing as tension building.
They kill him because as they've tied up this family to make the choice, like, as they're like, no, we're not going to kill each other. And they're like, all right, so the cults, as it were, have to kill, like, their own members in order to, like, activate the plagues, sort of.
Yeah.
Like, every time they get a no, they start another plague until all of them have been... you know, killed and everything.
They basically are the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Yes, that is kind of the idea.
This
here.
Is what I mean with my one critique. I wish Jonathan Groff hadn't said, "Oh, they're the four horsemen of the apocalypse."
Yeah, that's right.
I'm like, ah.
But then he proceeds to explain it wrong.
Yeah, that is.
That's not what everybody knows. That's not what the four horsemen are, right?
Yeah. That scene is great, and the way they shoot it is awesome.
Yes.
But that was a quibble I had with it. The way they shoot it all in close up with
that's
the
so Shyamalan. That's so Shyamalan, though.
Very.
That's so Shyamalan.
Great scene. I'll point out a couple other of my quibbles.
We didn't mention her yet, but the actress who plays Gwen is really good. Really for like a child actress. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's really good.
Sells
the M. Night dialogue, which I would not trust a child to do with my life.
Right. A couple quibbles I have.
Sure.
Here, the character of Sabrina, the nurse one. Her death's kind of funny. She just kind of screams and runs at him.
Yeah, she sure
does. She doesn't even have anything in her hand.
She's like, oh, I got this.
That was a little weird to me.
There's
also...
What else was she gonna do?
There's also this strange thing. I know it's, like, pre-recorded, but it's when they're showing, like, the tsunami stuff on the TV, and they're like, here's this cell phone footage shot of it moments ago, but it's underwater. How'd they get that footage?
I'm sure it washed up on on land somewhere.
Got hit by a tsunami.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure
that
it's
was
fine.
One I was like,
I'm sure it's fine. That one is like a movie one to me. Like, all right,
it's a nitpick for sure, but
dude, the scene where the planes are falling out of the sky.
That's an awesome
so
scene. That's an awesome scene.
Like, that one felt the realest to me.
Yeah.
Like, that one, like, oh, like, if that happened, oh, man, that'd be fucked up.
And then the set piece I really like is the dual one where Andrew's trying to get the gun from the car.
Yeah.
Is that Andrew or is that the other one?
Eric's in the house
fighting. Yes, Andrew. Yeah, Eric's fighting, Dave Bautista's in the house, and Andrew's trying to get the gun out of the car. It's really great scene.
Dave Bautista gives a pretty fantastic monologue at the end of this movie, right before he eventually kills himself.
Yeah.
That just solidified it. Yeah, that dude's the best wrestler turned actor.
Yeah.
Like, might be the best athlete turned actor, hands down, that I can think of.
He's awesome. He's awesome in it.
Yeah.
He's awesome in it.
Love me some Dave Bautista.
Love to see the range in him.
His, It's crazy how that dude can be, like, intense and terrifying without even trying. You know what I mean?
Well,
like, I think that's why they casted him, is, like, because he just looks very intimidating and sounds very intimidating, but he's not. Which, he's like a gym teacher. Like all these people, that they're all just, like, regular-ass people.
And it's also how M. Night chooses to shoot him, use his, like, stature.
Yeah, there's one
to, like,
shot.
Fill the frame.
Where he's talking to Ben and Eric in front of him in the chairs, and
that's
the camera will keep, like, from the back of Dave Bautista's head, in like the center of the frame, will like pan back and forth between the husbands where Batista's head is still taking up like half the frame. He looks like he's 100 feet tall.
Right, exactly. I love that shot. I also love the ending shot and the reincorporation of that song.
My boogie shoes.
Yeah, really great. I wish it had had a more memorable score, like musical score.
Really? I thought the score was really good.
I'm struggling to remember it.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't really remember film scores unless it's like, you know, Babylon or something.
Fair enough.
And I have to, you know, hear it on TikTok.
You should have to hear it on
people
TikTok.
Are gonna play. I think I was talking to Sam about it, and I said, Voodoo Mama from Babylon, Harassment, My Boogie Shoes from Back in the Cabin Flirting.
I really like this movie. I really like what it's going for, and I think M. Night, for better or for worse, no one's doing it like him.
Keep making movies, M. Night. I know you're listening, and I know you're a big fan, and I know these words are gonna mean a lot to you, but, like, don't let the haters get you down. Like, as a former M. Night hater myself, a reformed one, I gotta say, I love what he's doing. I really loved this movie. I thought it was awesome. This is more of this. I want more of this out of M. Night. You know what this movie actually, in terms of evolution for the director, this gave me Ambulance vibes. In terms of, okay. I'm watching a movie that, in my eyes, shows a director advancing to, like, a more mature and thoughtful part of their career. They're still doing their thing. Like, it's still unmistakably like M. Night Michael Bay. But you know what I mean? Like, this just feels like we're growing up a little bit.
I can see that. I can totally see that.
I fucking love this movie. That's the show.
Hell yeah. Thank you guys for listening. If you like the podcast, you can follow it on Twitter and Instagram at Cinema Shakedown, and you can follow me personally on Twitter and Letterboxd at Kyle Craig. That's KRIEGHBAUM.
And you can follow me on Letterboxd at my name, Jordan Dennis, or on Twitter and Instagram at J_Dennis99. Kyle, do you want to tell the people about the magic we'll be experiencing next week?
We're going to be talking about a trilogy next week.
The best trilogy.
With the release of the new Magic Mike's Last Dance, we're going to be going back and watching Magic Mike, Magic Mike XXL, and then the new one.
This Cinema Shakedown's for the ladies.
Ooh,
and the gay men. And also the non-binary people that are attracted to dudes.
He said it.
Anyway, guys, we'll see you next week for that.
Bye.